a trustworthy Dan P here with Infinite Lives Podcast. Here I talk about Evolve with two friends that work at Turtle Rock Studios. Brandon I've known for over a decade since college, and Brill I've gotten to know through Dota. These are my quote-unquote Dota friends. I'm thankful for 2K Games and Turtle Rock Studios for allowing this opportunity for Infinite Lives Podcast to interview these two guys. I'm hoping you like it as well. If you do, you can check out all of our podcasts and videos at infinitelives.us and youtube.com/infinitelivespodcast. We have interviews with Giant Bomb's own Patrick Klepek, nerdcore rapper Megaran, who's awesome, Neo Scavenger creator Dan Fedor, check that out on Steam, and the creators of Anodyne, Analgesic Productions. Plus, we have a number of video interviews with indie developers at PAX Prime, so check that out. Darkest Dungeon looks awesome. Chroma Squad, pretty cool. The Magic Circle looks pretty sick. Here at Infinite Lives, we love developers, big and small. So I hope you liked the interview. I had a lot of fun. I think Brandon and Brill both had a lot of fun. And without further ado, here you go. Hey, everybody. This is Dan P with Infinite Lives Podcast. I got a very special interview with some people from Turtle Rock Studios. I have Brandon Yanez and Brill Montan.
Hey. Hello.
Hey, so what do you guys do at Turtle Rock?
I am a character artist. I make monsters and creatures and whatnot for them. Also do other duties like pipeline stuff and all that other crap stuff. So like, how are we going to make this creature and put it in the game and how is it going to be optimized and all that stuff. Other boring stuff that's kind of, I guess, character art related, but
gamers want to know. They're literally calling on the other line. They want to know.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, pipeline stuff is boring. We'll talk about it in depth, but yeah, I got to make monsters pretty much.
Cool. So, bro, what do you do?
I'm a senior QA tester at Turtle Rock, and it's pretty much the QA testing job. But I find that working on the dev side is a little more interesting because there's a lot of like connections between different departments that I kind of help fill in for, a lot of communication things. And one of my favorite parts is dealing with like the balance and playtesting, because I essentially make sure the playtest happens every day. Otherwise it doesn't. And then people throw out GIF wars and angry emails. Where is the playtest?
Brill's the one that we blame when we don't get to play the game during the day.
Oh, are you the reason why it is delayed till February of next year?
Mm-hmm. If you have to put blame on, we'll put it directly on Brill.
All right, fine, I'll take it.
Yeah, you do. We spam him during the like 2 minutes before the playtest is supposed to go up daily. Like, where's the playtest, bro? Where's the playtest? Where's the playtest? Like, if you go over to his desk, he just says like people harassing him.
Jeez. So what did you guys work on before you came to Turtle Rock?
I was at Warner Brothers and Monolith on the Fear series, the Condemned series, the Gotham series, and then EA before that, and other boring stuff that isn't super good. Nothing as good as this one. So
I like it. Brill, what did you work on before?
I worked at THQ for 5 years in their QA, and I had gone through a series of games like Supreme Commander, Dawn of War, Metro, Frontlines, Homefront, Dawn of War, a lot of games.
Dawn of War was good.
Yeah.
Yes, Dawn of War was good.
It's really good.
Was there a secret Homeworld 3 that nobody ever knew about?
Oh, confirm it, Brill.
Confirm or deny. Homeworld 3.
Confirm it right now. Tell everybody.
I
want to know.
Fine to say. there was plans for making it like a MMO shooter, which horrified a lot of us. Yeah.
What? Like, all right. Well, it's good. It's good that they.
yeah.
That never happened then.
Don't worry about spilling the beans on other companies' infos, Brill. It doesn't matter. Chloe's not going to get mad.
It's totally fine. So how did you guys end up at Turtle Rock? Was it just you just applied kind of thing, or did somebody recommend you guys?
I was in a big layoff at Warner, which was good because I was kind of, I don't know, maybe it stagnated, you know, like the creativity of the sort of studio, and they were like hiring all these different, not hiring, they're buying entire studios and sort of like combining together, and the culture really changed. And I'm big on culture, and that's why Turtle Rock is like absolutely 100% like favorite studio I've ever worked for, because everyone's really cool. You know, everyone has a pretty damn good rapport. You know, we play the game constantly and stuff. So, for me, it was like a almost a voluntary, like paid, exit. And I was pretty happy. And I was down in California just sort of like on sabbatical, you know, like, I don't know, just not working for a while. It was like a 3-month paid vacation. And I was looking around California, and you know, there's not a lot of spots for sort of senior character artists and stuff. There's like, you know, a lot of studios, but maybe not like a lot of like really good spots. And there's one open at Turtle Rock, and I hadn't really ever heard of them. And I thought that, you know, Valve made sort of like Left 4 Dead and Counter-Strike and stuff like that. So I didn't really associate like a different company with that. So when I saw it, I was like, you know, like, I'm maybe a little skeptical of it, you know, but these guys like actually made Left 4 Dead. They're the ones that Valve bought the product from. And then it, you know, and then they went up there and then they made Left 4 Dead, which is like one of those like all time memorable gaming experiences for me, at least. I don't know. Like when I first saw it, I was just, you know, if I had known that they had actually done, I would have been more like fervent and applying and like harassing them to do it. But, like, I talked to them for a little bit, and then they said that they didn't have a place, and then or they didn't know where like a senior position would go in and their thing. But then a couple months later, they called me back, and I went in, and I was still a little skeptical. But then they showed me Evolve, and I was just like, "Holy crap! Like what can I do for, you know, to like get a spot on it, you know?" And this was like maybe like 2 years ago and some change, and so like it was even kind of like a different game, a different evolution. I hate using that pun, but I know, right? But it was like, but the core idea was the same. Like, there's a monster and these people are hunting and stuff like that. And like, even the early iteration was like fun. They let me play it that day, like the first day, you know. And that's sort of like the staple of our game too. Like, people don't just like review it based on what they see. Like, we'll let them play it, you know, and so that's how they got me too. So I hope that's how they get everybody else as well. So,
yeah, I'm going to come back to that playing the game and kind of being convinced of what it is. But so, bro, how did you end up at Turtle Rock?
I actually heard about Turtle Rock back in 2007 or before they came out with Left 4 Dead, but like there was ads about it. My sister had a friend who worked there, and he was one of the two original programmers for Left 4 Dead. And at the time, I looked at him like, that seems really cool, but like I have a good gig going on with THQ. But then eventually, when they shut down our facility and kind of relocated the work to Montreal, I was free to look for other places. And then I remembered this Turtle Rock place again, where my sister was telling me, hey, they're looking for QA. So I hit up my sister's friend and asked him, like, what is it like working at Turtle Rock? And everything that he explained to me seemed really cool. So I decided to get an interview and check it out there. And just going to the studio, playing the game, like, I was convinced the game was amazing just the first time playing it. Like, it was super early alpha, but it looked amazing and like ready to go. And just like seeing how that kind of culture was with the, I think when I got there was maybe 46 people or so, whatnot. So it was kind of small, had a really nice homey feel to it. Everyone was really nice. And
did we arrive at the same time, bro? It sounds like it. You were before me, right? Are you a year before me?
Yeah. I remember when you came later. But yeah, I got there 2 years ago, May 11th, So I'm just, it was a great move for me. Probably one of the best experiences I've had. And like, this is the first time I've been dev side, but like, I never had a bad day at the publisher for 5 years. I know other people complain about it, but I enjoyed every day at THQ. But compared to here at Turtle Rock, like every day is amazing. Even like living here where I have a room for rent and there's a daycare that wakes me up in the morning, and just when I'm about to get upset at those kids, I'm like, it's okay. I'm going to work.
Nice.
So to be yelled at and harassed by us.
Yeah. So you guys mentioned a few times like the culture at Turtle Rock and kind of how that's kind of affected how you guys like approaching the work and like working there. Like, what is it about the culture? What's unique about the culture there?
For me, it's like honesty. You know, I think everyone is really honest with personal stuff. And even the professional side of it, you know, like we're honest when we don't like something and we're honest that it's not good enough, you know, and so we'll, you know, always try to make it better, you know. And so I think there's not a lot of ego, and that's huge, because ego will like sort of like tank really good projects that have a lot of potential and stuff. And the reason why I feel like we're not tanking is there's no ego. Like, you know, the best person at the studio is going to be wrong sometime, and you know, we try things, and if it doesn't work, we're honest that it just didn't work, and we're honest when it does work. So like, one of the examples was like, the monster was first person for a long time, you know, and I'm a pretty big first person shooter fan, and we were going to make the switch to third person, and I was like so against it. I was like, oh god, it's gonna ruin the competitiveness of it, because I don't really feel like third person stuff is like super competitive, sans maybe Gears of War, but when we made it and we like it was immediately like, this is much better. Like, I was completely wrong, you know, like, and that's cool, because we can try it and then and see if you know it works. You don't do that at a lot of other studios. There's like this hierarchy that's just like, we're right, and you there's no feedback, you know, but everybody talks here. We like try out new things. We all get together. The lead designer is like super open, just to sort of like, you know, talk things out, chat things out. And sometimes, you know, he won't agree with you. Sometimes he won't agree. And then later, you know, he'll agree. Or sometimes he won't agree with you and he's totally can write, you know. And so but a lot of the things is he'll try things, and so that's huge. And the other thing is, we actually play the game every day for an hour, unless Bill breaks the build, which I'm
just the messenger, man.
You're not. No, you do it. I don't understand that beeps and boops, all the ones and zeros. You break that stuff. Shapes and colors, man.
I'd say Brandon's on track there, and I think a lot of what makes it that way is because of our founders, Phil and Chris Ashton. Like, they're really experienced developers, and they've gone through like some really dark times in game development. And when they had this opportunity to found this studio, like, they could make it the way they wanted, and they wanted to make it a place that they enjoyed coming to every day and not like dreaded. And I really feel that, where every day I come here, it's just I'm really excited and happy for it. And so like, whenever they were hiring people, they would meet with everybody. And I think like, in that way that they got to see everyone coming into the company, they could get an idea of like, if they meshed with our culture, and like could find those kind of right people for it. And like, over time, they'll integrate and like have their discussions, sometimes arguments, but everyone comes around and understands we're just being open and conversing about these concepts and such.
It kind of seems simple, but I'm guessing that doesn't happen at every studio.
Oh, hell no, not at all. Like, it's a stark contrast, you know. You never name names, but like, you know, there's places I've been that just, I don't know, you say, hey, this isn't very good, and they're like, yes, it is, and you're like, okay, you know, like, what are you gonna do? You know, you can like bang against the wall and sort of like, I guess, cause problems, try to get things changed, but that's, you know, degrading in its own sense. And in here, it's, you know, like, you campaign a little bit, like, hey, I think this is broken, and you talk about it, and then you try the solutions, and if they don't work, then you say, hey, I still feel like, in my experience, this is still broken, or this doesn't play well. And so things get changed. It's pretty cool. One of the other anecdotes, all of our desks are on wheels, and so
okay.
If you're, like, and they have batteries, like, in the desk. And so, like, the batteries plug into the wall, and then you plug your computer into the battery or whatever. So if you want to be like, hey, I got to go work for this guy, like, with this guy for just a day, you can just, like, pull the desk off, and then you don't even turn your computer off.
Huh.
You lose internet, which kind of sucks, but you want to lose internet for, like, even 5 minutes and, like, getting the shakes. But you can, like, move your desk over to other people and then just work with them for a couple days. So we're constantly swapping in and out, like, depending on what we need at the time. And the owners in non-crunch time, we generally, like, mix the whole studio. So you're never, like, sort of forming cliques. You know, you might be next to a programmer. You might be next to a sound guy. You know, you might be next to, like, a QA person.
Awesome.
Just to make sure that, you know, everyone's getting along, because everyone has valuable information, has valuable experience, and nobody's really ever 100% wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. So you just get a lot of cool perspective, and I've never had that ever, you know? Usually you just go in, like, a tight little click, and you don't really get your voice heard, so, yeah.
Yeah, that is a really big thing. I've moved around and, like, sat around various people with different skills, and it's just, like, you get that hearing about what they're doing, you gain more perspective, and everyone just kind of becomes more knowledgeable by proxy of being around all these other people.
You would think allowing creative people to be creative would be kind of number one priority for studios and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, sometimes it's, like, understandable, you know, like, you wouldn't want to say, like, let somebody have full creative over a franchise that you put, like, a lot of money into, you know, and, like, you know, it sells because it is this formula. And so, like, you kind of understand that stuff, but then you can kind of understand why, like, sometimes those brands will stagnate because they don't get to try a lot of new things. So for us, because this is our first, like, we get to just do what we want and what we think is fun, and that's why it's, like, super successful for us, at least, you know. We're excited.
So let's get back into the actual game. Like, what's Evolve? For anybody the two people in America that probably don't know what Evolve is, how would you describe Evolve? I have a number of ways to describe it, but I want to hear what you guys, how would you, give me the elevator speech. What's Evolve?
Get it, bro.
A 4-versus-1 competitive, cooperative, first-person, third-person shooter fighting game.
Right? But you forgot Sci-Fi Frontier.
Oh, Sci-Fi Frontier.
I think we were going over how we would explain it, like, a couple of months ago, and it was difficult because it's not like a cookie cutter anything, right? Like you have one side that's first person and one side that's third person. And I don't know any games that do that, and we only did that because that was fun, right? So, like, I don't know. It's fun. That's how I describe it.
It just seems like we're doing the first of its kind, so it's a little hard to classify just yet. We're defining a genre almost.
Okay, so how about this? Since Turtle Rock made Left 4 Dead, and I would assume that's probably the first thing that people heard when they heard about Evolve is people who made Left 4 Dead and things. So how is this different from Left 4 Dead? How is this not Left 4 Dead 3? How is this not just, you know, another iteration of that?
Well, I mean, there's some elements that draw from it. You know, it's the same designer. So, like, there may be things that you kind of, like, are reminiscent, you know, but the game in as a whole, you know, there's not, like, a lot of horde stuff that you're shooting. The co-op elements are there and much more expanded, you know, like you gotta make sure that you're working as a team always, or you're gonna lose, right? Like, but then there's a whole other element where you don't work as a team and you're completely lone hunter, and you basically do what you want, and you need to like break this like fellowship. You know, you have to sort of string them out, or like kill one, or like you know, basically disrupt their cooperative stuff to sort of win. And it didn't really have that in Left 4 Dead. I guess they had tank mode, but the tank seems so simple now compared to sort of what we have.
Definitely.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, it's a bit uneven when you look at like the humans with guns and the zombies that all kind of deal with things melee for the most part, but it's still sort of a 4v4 scenario. In this 4v1 format that we have in Evolve, it's like totally different mindsets where as this monster, you are more powerful, but you're kind of thinking like this predator stalker slash also like running scared hunted. And as the group of hunters, like they have more insight into like kind of what's going on as a team because they get more perspective. Mm-hmm. But like there's these different perspectives you have that don't really carry over from Left 4 Dead. There's the co-op aspect, which translates over to the hunters, but in a way the monster is kind of like the hunters of Left 4 Dead, and the hunters are like the zombies of Left 4 Dead. It's sort of a different perspective.
Yeah, it's I feel like it's you know, you can describe it in very kind of concrete terms, you know, kind of 4v1, those kind of things. You know, there's like one monster is competitive and those kind of things, but I feel like it really lends itself to actually being experienced, per se.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of what you said, Brandon, earlier, where like, you know, when you actually did play it, when you were first being hired and everything, and you're just kind of like, wow, I really want to be on this team. And it's kind of the same feeling when I first played it. I figured I'd probably like it already, because I kind of like first-person shooter games and cooperative stuff and everything. But when I played it in the alpha, like, I don't know, a few weeks ago or something like that, it kind of clicked for me. I was like, okay, I can see us playing this for quite a bit. And it was kind of a great example was at PAX when my buddy John, you know, also part of the Infinite Lives podcast, we both played it, and it was his first time playing it. And I think he played a support or something like that. And he was kind of, you know, ambivalent towards the game, kind of a little bit, 50-50. And once he came out of there, he was like, I kind of just want to play more Evolve right now. And he was actually being like super honest. He wasn't being like sarcastic or anything. I was like, I just kind of want to play this right now. Can we just, yeah.
That makes me super happy. Cause I know John likes Nintendo stuff, you know, like, you know, a lot of games that I like as well, like Smash Brothers and whatnot, but I didn't see him as a shooter person, so that makes me happy. I think a lot of it too is we sort of made it accessible, I guess. So like, mm-hmm. because of the cooperative stuff, each class, you know, like if you want the running gun, you can take the assault and you can feel like, you know, like Call of Duty style stuff. But like the support class is really cooperative. It really is like a you know, like I'm going to help out the team, and you don't have to have like, the greatest Twitch accuracy to sort of like contribute at a competitive sort of level on that. You just have to use your smarts, you know, and you have to make sure you're positioned right and like you're helping the right people and stuff. So for us, we hope that a lot of people sort of find that fun. And I know I do. And like, I started out being like a hardcore monster player. Like this is the best thing ever. And then I figure out how to play Trapper. Or like, once we sort of tune the Trapper in, like I've been diehard Trapper for a long time, and like I love it, like I play every day now, so I can't I want to play right now if we can be playing.
Well, how about you, bro? Like was it kind of like you know, kind of eye-opening experience, like the first time you really played the game and kind of like, oh, okay, I understand what this is now?
The first time I played it at the interview, I saw great potential in this game, and like having worked on it for like 2 years, I love like theory crafting things in my free time, and just thinking about how the different ways this game could go was always like super exciting. Sometimes a little unhealthy, to the point I was having dreams and sometimes nightmares.
All right.
But it's, you know, it was,
we have different dreams, bro.
Hey, you gotta love what you do, right?
Yeah. Well, sometimes those are the signs that, like, I'm spending a little too much time with the game.
You know what? I get that, too. Like, when you play, like, WoW, until like 7-8 in the morning, and then you have these like fever dreams of just like raiding or like not getting the loot you want. It's so sad.
I had a Dota dream earlier this week.
Yes, good. I've gotten my clutches into you.
That I was letting the team down, and I kind of woke up. I was kind of like, what?
dude, so we played Dota last night, and me and Dan and Braille until 2 in the morning or whatever, and then I started playing Dead Rising 3 at 2 in the morning, and it was so awesome, like so fun. It was maybe a little buggy, but so awesome. I like played until 5:30, and then I was going to bed, and I was looking at the Twitch stream, and there was a Dota tournament in China, and so I watched until 7 in the morning. What? I had like the worst dreams. I am not an adult.
I can confirm that.
No, you can't. Don't.
All right, so you guys kind of talked about playing the game when you first were interviewing for Turtle Rock. What was that game like, and how different is it from the product we see right now? Like, what kind of concepts were either refined or changed dramatically, or those kind of things? What was the game like back then?
Well, the scale of it was a lot larger back then. The environments were much wider terrains, and there was like a big emphasis on the hunt, like running across massive maps and such. But we ended up like pulling that back and shrinking it down because it would just lead to a lot of running and it wasn't as fun. All the hunters were kind of cookie cutter the same, and they would just pick their equipment. You could have a lot of like overlap where 4 players could all have shield guns or healing guns, and they would just be like, I can't kill anyone. They just keep hitting.
I cheesed a tournament with all medics and all mines, and they just stood on mines and healed each other.
Sounds like old school paladins in WoW.
Yeah, yeah, and to what Brill's saying, like the openness of the maps, you know, like was a draw for me. Like I thought that would be really cool, but playing the game constantly, you know, like we're just like, man, like all this running is, you know, it's like, you know, I'm running like a half of the game, I should be fighting 80% of it and running 20% of it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think a lot of the game has been trimmed down and sort of like made to be more action packed. So there's like suspenseful moments where you're like in the jungle trying to find this thing, but, you know, they're always sort of like, connected with like bat fights, right? And, some of that has to do with, map design. So like they built a lot of choke points in before. They were just big open maps, and so you couldn't really cut anybody off. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the mobile arena at all. Like there was no mobile arena. And once that came in, that was a big one to be like, yeah, you know, and that was another one of those ideas that were like, what? You're going to get trapped in there and you can't move? And then I was like, everyone's just like, what? That's, I don't know. And then you like put it in and we're like, oh yeah. Whoops.
Yeah. That's... I feel like other than the Goliath, that's kind of like one of the, I don't know, kind of things that I always see on every video, that mobile arena. That's kind of like the calling card for that game, or at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I always liked I thought the harpoons were super unique as well. I've seen them now for years now, so they're not as unique to me. But I had never like tethered another person with a beam, you know, like, and you can do some tricky shit with Griffin, like jump at like double jump in the air and then harpoon Kraken, and then when you land the ground you pull him to the ground and stuff to like stop him from lightning striking somebody, or you know, I haven't seen that before.
I think it was reminiscent for me of like tribes where they had the grapple hook, and I loved like swinging like a monkey with those things, just shooting, swing, shoot, swing. But it didn't work quite the same as it does here in a ball, where you're like, you're actually restricting this giant beast's movement with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, how come you didn't advocate for rocket sliding, like in tribes? Wanted. No.
I like it in tribes, but it doesn't quite fit the game.
They did that in the new tribes, right? Where they just put it in space.
Yeah. That's, you just hold it down.
To me, that was a mistake. Because they took a really core element that like maybe people that have been around for a long time like got really good at that sliding. It would be like if you put in the bunny hopping and Counter-Strike as a mechanic that you can just hit a button to bunny hop. And like, basically it was a bug that they kept in. And so to me, it like alienated, like I hadn't played Tribes in 3 years, 4 years. And I was super excited about the new one because I loved the first two, you know, and I played the second one before the sliding got really crazy, you know, before people found it. And then I went back and I was like, everyone's just skating around. Like this is like chaos. Like how would I, without devoting a crazy amount of time to being like, I'm going to do it, you know, like how would I get into that? Like that was nuts.
So Brill, working in QA, how do you kind of balance the, you know, what's a bug, what's an exploit, you know, what's just something that just needs to be rebalanced, or what's something that's just a good player strategy? Like, I've always found that fascinating with kind of, you know, when you're really refining a game and everything like that, like, how do you differentiate between those things? Or does it just come down to, you know, the philosophy of the studio?
That's tough. I try to always take on the perspective that everything is a bug, but then I'll go back and reanalyze it and like, okay, let's see. Does this actually break anything? Is this kind of going against the original design? Is this a bad thing? Like sometimes there's a bug that just actually works out well for gameplay. And so just be part of the design. But other times, like, it's a clear exploit. And so I'll like bring it to other people's attention and get another perspective on it. Cause like it should never just be like one person who kind of like says it all, but it's always good to have that other perspective of someone else.
Okay. And Brandon, so you worked on a lot of the art. So what, like, there were you kind of heavily involved in the foundation of like what the game's going to look like, or were you kind of like fleshing out things? Like what was your part in it?
I did a lot of help with the monster design, but the other concept artist who I work with pretty closely, Stephen Opie, you know, he's like sort of the rock for monster stuff. So he'll like sketch out designs, and then, you know, there's a little bit of a, you know, like back and forth too. It's really organic. It's super fun. I've never done it before. That's and it cool. And it tends to work out real well. So we just have concept artists, you know, that just start just scribbling down really quickly, and then we kind of like, yeah, that's really cool, that horn's really cool, that tongue's really cool, like, you know, and then we sort of like hone it in iterations, you know. And then at one point, before even everything was like set, we'll start doing 3D for it just to make sure that in 3D it looks really good. And then even while we're doing that, like we have this thing that we did on Kraken where like me and Oakley sit next to each other, sit next to me for a long time, but we're getting really lazy about like turning and looking at the person's screen. So we just had Google Hangouts of each other's screens, like while we're working.
Okay.
And like, so I could just look, he'd be like, hey, look at this. And I look over and he'd be like, oh, that's cool. You know, or he'd be like, hey, that's really cool. And then he has something to add to it. So he would like, he would screenshot my screen on his computer and then put it in Photoshop and then start painting on it. And then I'm watching him paint, like a paint over of what I'm doing right now. I'm like, oh, you want like a horn like that? Yeah, that's really cool. Right. And so like we do stuff. So, there's a lot of organic stuff. When we started, the art doesn't really look anything like what it looks now. Right now, it got a lot darker. It got a lot more like claustrophobic. It kind of went like kind of loco tech, so like pipes and like hard metal surfaces that are like kind of angular. Like there's not a lot of like organic metal sort of shapes. You know, we just kind of like that old dark sci-fi vibe, yeah, you know,
like an 80s sci-fi kind of thing going. Early 90s, yeah.
Yeah, and the monsters sort of follow that as well. Like, you know, we didn't want anything, because some of the old iterations of like, you know, like Kraken were very like abstract. You know, like there's a lot of like crazy tentacles going all over the place and forms that you can't really sort of like identify with, right? But we don't want it to look too sort of like identifiable, but just identifiable enough that it kind of like makes you feel like creeped out, or like, you know, it's like abhorrent, right? So with a lot of the monsters we did that, we'd be like, you know, that looks too much bestial, so we'll add a little bit of human into it, add a little more beast, you know, and like mix different sort of monsters until they come out to what they are now, you know. I don't know.
Wow, that sounds cool. Very, very cool. Well, heading towards the end, so everybody whoever interview or have on my podcast or anything like that, I always ask them what their gamer origin is. And it sounds kind of cheesy, but I like one of my things with Infinite Lives is that as I've learned through the years, is that kind of like, you know, love for video games and everything kind of binds people together or something, to be as hokey as possible. Kind of like, you know, sports or those kind of things. Most of my friendships are, you know, when I came up here to Seattle are because of video games. The reason why I'm friends with you, Brandon, is because of video games and Dungeons and Dragons.
So, same. Oh, don't tell people that. Same.
What, the same Dungeons and Dragons part?
Shh.
Okay. All right, so yeah. I would assume same thing with Brill. The reason why I talk to you almost every night is because of Dota. It's kind of weird. But yeah, so how did you guys start? Like, what was 5 year old Brandon, 5 year old Brill playing? Like, did you guys start early, or what?
Yeah, Zelda. Zelda was the gold disc Zelda for Nintendo. My dad drove up. I remember I was sitting in the yard, and when my dad drove up with this gold cartridge, and it was like, I mean, I was so young, and he was just like, look at this, and I was like, that was shiny, like, I didn't know what the hell it was, and that was, it was the end. He, like, set my course. Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
700 Steam games later, I'm broke.
I started out on Nintendo as well. My sister really wanted it. I didn't quite know what it was at the time, but then, like, started playing Mario Brothers, Duck Hunt, Mike Tyson's Punch Out, and then my sister originally wanted it, and she like played the crap out of Tetris, became super master at it, and then she kind of fell off of it, and then I started like going to the warehouse and renting games every weekend and playing Nintendo games up until like one of them crashed, and I was like frustrated. But then
QA,
the button.
I could fix this.
Story.
I could make the difference.
I'm gonna call the Nintendo hotline.
Yeah, but you know what? Oh, good.
After Nintendo, it was Super Nintendo, but then like beyond that, it kind of stopped for me because then I discovered like the PC, and someone gave me like a copy of StarCraft, and I started playing that, and I just became like super addicted to that. And that was like the main thing that like drew me into PC gaming, and then like that's how I just kind of came to be a PC gaming elitist.
In our Asian American community, there's before StarCraft and after StarCraft. Monumentous change.
I think mine was Doom. Like
Doom.
Take me to PC is Doom and Wolfenstein. Like that stuff was. Like eye-opening, you know, it's really cool. Anecdote about this stuff, like I got a Wii U recently, and I just got it for Smash Brothers. I love Smash Brothers, one of the best fighting games ever, right? And I grabbed Zelda 2. Zelda 2 is the original Dark Souls, and I remember loving Zelda 2 to death, right? Like when I was a kid, and I'm playing it, I'm like, this motherfucking game is so hard, like what the hell?
Yeah.
And I love it, and like it completely like defines me. And I think my greatest memory was Zelda 2, just dying constantly over and over and over. You know?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever gotten anywhere in that game like at all, like advanced the game, because it literally drops you right in the middle of the world, and you can be game over in 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, so the similarities are. Or looking, I'm not going to say that they stole it. Maybe it's derivative, right? But like, when you die, you lose all your stuff, right?
Yeah.
The magic points are the points like you buy, sort of like use it or lose it. You use it, or if you die, it's gone, right? That sucks. Uh-huh. Every time you die, you go back to the start, but all the accomplishments you made are still sort of like accomplished, but they're, you know, everything is respawned. There's knights that. If you kill them, they don't respawn. You know, like, their heart is hard as shit. They're like, I'm 33 years old, and I was whimpering and getting really pissed because, like, it attacks high, low. Like, what the hell? Like, who could do this, you know? Oh, I love it.
I'm writing this down. Zelda 2 is Dark Souls.
That it is.
For investigative peace later.
You should try it. Definitely. It's on the Wii U. You got it. And it plays really good on that little screen, too. So.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys, for sitting down to me and everything, making time and stuff. I think Evolve is awesome. And I think that I Thank can't you. Wait till I play it again, I guess, until the big alpha, hopefully, and all that stuff. And, yeah, it's just really, you know, it's one of those games that you really have to play to believe it, because it's really that good. I think so.
It sells itself.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Let's play Dota.
All right.
Dota.